Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. I'm Shang Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. Also, you can find my work at MEC Sharks and at Twitter at Shang_Peng.
And I'm Key McNally. You can find me on Twitter at halfwall_hockey, on my website, half-wallhockey.com, also on San Jose Hockey Now. This week, it is a...
The Sharks still haven't won a game.
Yeah, the Sharks, it's still winless. It's like they haven't even started the season.
No, they haven't, yeah. October doesn't count, obviously, so.
Yeah, the Sharks are officially more than 10% of the way through the season, and they do not have their first win, which kind of tells you that this season is already kind of written off. We're going to talk about a few things related to the Sharks this week. We have a lot of different news that happened. First off the bat, we've got a little bit of talk about Jumbo retiring, officially retiring. It has been rumored for a while. We're also going to talk about some of the roster moves, the scratches and injuries, and all sorts of different line combination things that the Sharks have tried to get
Thomas
their first
Bortolo,
win.
I know a lot of people are upset that he got sent down.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Bortolo and Peterson getting sent down. Mm-hmm. And then finally, our final topic, another topic is going to be the Sharks are bad. And we're going to talk about just how bad they've been. And if we can get to it, we're also going to have a short prospects update for everybody. Just what to look out for in the future.
And with some hope.
Yeah, we start off really bad and then we end with some hope, just like the Sharks will do this season.
All right, hopefully what the Sharks do over the next 5 years, I guess.
I think the only way to start this show is with the news of Joe Thornton, just because of how impactful Joe was as a San Jose Shark and how impactful he was to this franchise, and obviously with his absence from the ice being felt still today. Let's talk a little bit about Joe Thornton, his retirement, and where you think he goes next.
Yeah, Joe, in Joe Thornton fashion, went shirtless for his retirement announcement, which is just perfect for Joe. I would say that my guess, this is just a guess, pure guess, but if you are counting on a jersey retirement this season, I would guess maybe not, just because you want to do these things right. And I don't think anything was planned before the season. I'm not exactly sure when Jumbo filed his papers, but I don't get the sense that that this was necessarily planned for, or he might have announced at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing that I'll say off the top, that maybe next year, we know it's going to happen. He's going to get his jersey retired, but maybe next year, so you can do it right. Hopefully you can do it in a game where they play Boston. That'll be cool. That'll be appropriate. Mm-hmm. And also have Marco Sturm, Brad Stewart, and of course, Wayne Primo.
That's a good idea.
And Doug Wilson too. And Michael Cano. Anyway, mm-hmm. though, in terms of what's next for him, David Quinn actually suggested something interesting today in his press conference, that first that he had asked Jumbo if Jumbo wanted to come back during, I don't know, they play golf during the summer. And Jumbo said no. We've always been under the presumption that Jumbo would come back for the right NHL role, like not on a PTO, not to start in the AHL and work his way up, but if a team will give him a solid role in the NHL. What Quinn said goes against that. So that was interesting. But also the other part was that David said that he talked to Jumbo about joining the Sharks organization in official capacity finally. And Quinn said that Jumbo also said no to that too. And mm-hmm. I think that comes maybe from Jumbo just kind of enjoying his life. And I think one interesting thing he said too is that he's retired from the NHL. And so I'm just kind of speculating here, but I do believe that Jumbo still loves to play, still loves to be out there. He obviously doesn't want to embarrass himself, right? And so he's not going to take a secondary, he's not going to go to the AHL or whatever, right? And he shouldn't.
Yeah.
But could we see him play somewhere just for fun a little bit? I wouldn't shock me, but I'm not sure.
Played in Switzerland, right? When the NHL had the lockout.
I mean, he's played in Switzerland a lot, and he goes every summer because his wife is from there. But this past summer, though, it was notable that instead of playing in Switzerland and getting himself ready for the NHL call somewhere, that he didn't play, and instead he was just caught coaching in Switzerland. You know, coaching his former Davos team.
Yeah. So. We'll see. Yeah, he phrased that interestingly. I'm retired from the NHL. And he was basically telling everybody that we already knew it, but he just wanted to, you know, I guess he probably got tired of people bothering him.
Sure.
And just said,
well, that, you know, that's his fault, though.
Yeah. He's Jumbo.
I mean, that's fine. He is Jumbo. But I asked him point blank after the Legends game before the Marlowe jersey retirement. I think I was the one to ask him, what are your plans now with your career or something like that? Mm-hmm. And he says something like, well, I'm going to play in a game. I'm going to go pick up my kids tomorrow. Go coach some hockey with them too. And then I'm going to go home.
Yeah.
And so he answered his question. He answered what his future plans were, but
for the next 24 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess it's what, like Demers said, you're like 95% of the way out and 5% in, and you don't want to say you're out.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
Maybe. Anyways, I love Jumbo. One of everybody's favorite Sharks of all time. And he really was like this franchise for however long he was here. And it just goes to show every time that the Sharks are going five games with three goals total, that they miss Joe incredibly, or prime Joe Thornton incredibly.
They should time a Joe Thornton announcement for every 9-game losing streak just to distract the populace. So
exactly. We needed a little bit of just reminder of what the Sharks were. Having a little bit of melancholy feeling about the Sharks this week because it was not a good week. Anyways,
wow, just melancholy?
Melancholy.
That seems...
I wanted to use a big word. It
that seems like you're taking it pretty lightly, actually.
Yeah.
not full-blown depression?
No, because there was no hope, and we knew it. So there was never, like, you never get that optimism. You know, you can't get, like, the whole roller coaster effect of thinking they're going to be good and then bad. It's just kind of melancholy. It's just
I thought that you thought, and I don't even know why I said it. I fully regret it, and I apologize. I made a mistake. I made a terrible mistake. You know, I had a feeling that they might be a little more competitive, and they might be, you know, I said 70-plus points. You possible. Liked Barabanov and Duclair. So you had a little optimism.
Yeah.
And at least turning those two into...
Yeah, it didn't work out for that. We're going to keep talking little bits about our predictions throughout the year. Just little bits. Anyway.
No, we're not going to bring it up ever again. I want to bury that episode.
Until the next week.
We bring it up. Exactly.
All right. So this week we also had, I don't even know how many roster moves. It felt like once the Sharks started to unravel, once more injuries started to pile up, that it became a little bit of like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Sure.
In terms of who was going to play.
I mean, what else are you going to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to do something, and you have to like turn the line blender on. You press the button and hope the little blender's going to do something.
Joe Thornton isn't walking through the door.
Joe Thornton's not walking through the door. Neither is a very deep center group, which we talked about last week, and just in terms of how depleted it was. But why don't we lead off with one center that is, or actually two centers that are going to be sent back down to the Barracuda, in Bordalo and Peterson?
Well, Bordalo, yeah. I'll start with Bordalo because I know that that a lot of fans are upset that he got sent down, but you got to be honest with yourself. Bordalo is not NHL ready. He doesn't look NHL ready. He was, in my estimation, clearly the Sharks' top two centers with Granlund and Couture out are Hertl and Sturm. Mm-hmm. And the Sharks finally conceded to that in their lines when they moved Sturm up with Eklund a couple of games ago. If you look at the Tampa Bay game, and I know the Tampa Bay game, everybody was bad, so you know it's a little unfair to pick on just Bortolo, but he made a number of plays in that game are just not. You know, he was not just not good. Like, William Eklund was not good in that game, but I don't know if William Eklund was, like, bad, bad. Like, there were, like, clear plays all over the place that he shouldn't have been making. Whereas Bortolo, if you look at my game notes, and I don't want to pull all the gifts from that because I don't want to rip on the kid. He's still young. He's still immensely talented. I still think that it's very possible that he has a very bright future. So I hate to pick on younger players like that too hard. But if you look at a couple of the passes, neutral zone passes, when the Sharks actually did get rare times with possession and, you know, moving it up the neutral zone, and his passes to advance his next pass picked off, turned over the other way. I believe it was the Nick Paul goal. Of course, that was, it made it maybe 5-0. So, but he leaves his man. He chases Ruda's man, Stamkos, on that play. And Ruda was still in the play. And these are just sort of basic NHL things, I guess, that just you can't do. And sure, you had a nice goal against Colorado with Cork, even the Tampa Bay game. And it's in my game notes. He made a couple of nice passes, right? And that's there, right? But you can't have one awful, egregious play for every great play in the league. That's not an equation that works for anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, Erik Karlsson. Obviously he's a great example of that, where there'll be that egregious play he makes, but he would have maybe like five amazing plays to balance that out. But the one for one thing doesn't work though for anybody, not for Erik Karlsson, not for Ryan Merkley, right? Similar kind of example. And so Bortolo is clearly not ready. You're doing him, I think, a disservice. Keeping him in the NHL, where he's going to get roasted on a nightly basis by centers that are faster, stronger, and just more professional at this point than he is, more experienced than he is. And so it's kind of gone the way. Unfortunately, you know, I had hopes. He had a couple of flashes in the preseason, right? But it's just preseason, right? But this is the reason why I predicted that the Sharks would, if Couture started the season on IR, that they would start with Ryan Carpenter instead of Bortolo, exactly for this reason. Because Ryan Carpenter doesn't have Bortolo ceiling, but Ryan Carpenter is a pro. And Ryan Carpenter is a competent fourth-line center that doesn't hurt you, usually. And that's basically kind of what you're looking for at any of your positions or any of your roster spots, right? You're looking for a guy that obviously doesn't hurt you, right? But also too can help you beyond that. So he fulfills the first bar, which is he doesn't hurt you, and the second bar is that he can help you. So Bortolo was hurting the Sharks, and he wasn't helping enough, again, you know, on the balance to make up for the ways that he was hurting the team. And I don't want to single just him out, but he is the one that was sent down, and he is the one that really does need that time to develop. I think he will benefit if he comes to the Barracuda with the right attitude and works on the things that unfortunately have sort of plagued him from his very first Sharks game a couple of years ago, just the puck management. I wrote about that 2 years ago, all the things he was doing well 2 years ago, all the flashes, the oohs and ahs, right? Just careless with the puck in all the wrong places. And that still is happening. And that can't happen at NHL. You can't just give possession in give counterattacks like that, which those turnovers often do. On Peterson, I don't want to just talk just about Bortolo. On Peterson, I think Peterson is a better winger than center. I think we saw that last year. Granted, Peterson had the benefit of playing with Hurdle. And Hurdle, I think, it has been underrated over the years. We've talked about this, underrated over the years, in just terms of how he makes his teammates better. And I think he made Peterson better. And so Peterson as a centerman on a line with two younger players like Zetterlund and Eklund, who I have had good seasons, but you know, he's not a guy that's sort of carrying the mail in any sort of way. And another, I guess, a point toward Peterson as a center, I think, and I know faceoffs aren't that important, but I think Peterson had a 32% faceoff winning percentage in his time with the Sharks. Yeah. Now 30, yeah, you can stomach like a 40, a 45, right? I think Couture has been like at a 48, 49 for his career, right? Something like that, mm-hmm. right? You don't need to be a 60% Patrice Bergeron faceoff winner to be a qualified center in this league, but 30% is pretty bad. And that's basically just giving the puck to the opposition at the drop of every puck. And I think the same Peterson problems that made me sort of concerned about his game that I've talked a lot about, just not quite physical around. He's a finesse player, but that's fine. But if you're that finesse player, even like Bortolo, right? If you're that finesse player or like Merkley or like Carlson, right? If you're that finesse player, then you better make that number of great plays per game versus the number of soft or egregious mistake kind of plays, right? And again, Erik Karlsson is the prime example of this, where the balance is this way for the good and there's this for the bad, right? But sure. For Peterson, for Merkley, for Bortolo, it's kind of like this.
Yeah, that's it doesn't really actively help your team. And I honestly, most of the time, I don't think Peterson is as egregious of like the turnovers as
sure. No, Bortolo I agree. Is. Yeah.
I think Peterson's most of the time just kind of fades into the background. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really stand out, you know, much in the either direction, unless he is, you know, getting beat or just not being physical enough. But
Bortolo, or he'll make a great pass here and there. He did a lot more last season, but every once in a while he would make a great play here and there. So I don't want to take that day away from him. He is still capable in small areas of those subtle skill plays that he did more with Hurdle, but he did that here too at time to time.
Bortolo, the whole puck management thing that happened last year throughout the AHL too. It's that the problem is sending him to the AHL. The Barracuda kind of play like that. Like they play a very poor puck management style. They don't play with enough like puck possession to actually like to play that kind of game. So he gives the puck away a lot in that level too. So I really wonder, I think he just needs to be coached in terms of when he needs to stop trying to make that play that's not going to happen. I think he's trying to stand out, and like some credit to him for just trying to make things happen that he thinks that he might be able to do at this level, but it didn't work. And he does need more time in the AHL. He'll join a team that needs some help offensively. And hopefully he will develop a little bit more of a puck possessive style that isn't so risky, basically.
I feel like, you know, he has been told, and I think he's also been told by sort of, you know, how late he got called up last year, being moved to wing. So those are also messages too. And so he's got to get that out of his game if he wants to make an NHL impact. He is not a good enough player that he can, again, you know, play the way he does. Maybe on an awful team that doesn't care if he's leaking chances, he can be a 20 goal scorer, but not on any sort of team that fancies itself to be a good team. So he's got to fix stuff that unfortunately was there in his game when he first, you know, played for the Sharks in 2021-22.
Yeah, I suspect he'll go down to the Barracuda. And he'll probably get a late call-up, I imagine, sometime in the end of the season. And we'll see again if it's going to be the same kind of thing.
I hope it's better than that, because he is talented enough. I made that clear in my thoughts about him, that if he hits his skill, his ceiling is higher than the Gushins and the Robins and you name it. You know, short of Eklund and Smith. Among the forwards, in terms of pure offensive productivity, if they all, not that they all will hit, but if they all were to hit, I can see Bortolo producing as much as a Bjestad, as some of these other guys that are ahead of him in their prospect ranks. But the problem, though, with Bordalo is that, not to say his game hasn't grown at all, but it's been a little too, again, the same problem of a couple of years ago, right? And
I guess the people, fans will make the argument that something like, you know, the Sharks are bad anyway. Why don't they just have Bordalo run around and do whatever he wants, if even if they're letting up like 6 goals a game? But I don't think that's ever been David Quinn's like style of coaching.
Well, that's clearly what Greer has said. He's not playing due too, right?
Yeah. So that's like kind of the argument. That's the end of the argument there. So some fans will still bring it up though. Like that, you know, he should be up there just whipping around pucks and trying to develop. But if he starts to develop with those patterns, he's never going to make an NHL roster that actually has any winning aspirations. So what's the point?
That's the point. Yeah. If you just throw him out there and let him do, let him exercise his bad habits all over the ice.
Yeah.
You make a player that's full of bad habits. And also too, you influence other players. I don't know if it's exactly the same thing, but I was a teacher in my 20s, and the way I always approach things, and I think a locker room is not that different, but you walk into a locker room, you walk into a classroom, right? There are, say, 20 students, there are 20 players, right? There are five guys who are going to be your teacher's pets, your coach's darlings, right? Sure. Guys like, I don't know, a Kunin, a Eklund, guys who do everything that the coach wants, right? There's going to be five guys that don't, or are more trending more to like, I'm going to do it my way. Guys like Bordalo, maybe guys like Hoffman or something like that, right?
LeBanc,
guys
used
to
probably.
LeBanc to some degree, right? And there's those 10 guys in between. And so who is going to have the run of the locker room, of the classroom, of the on the ice product and what they put out there? Mm-hmm. And that's what Quinn and any coach, any GM has some control over. You want to put more of the better, I mean, it's the same thing we talked about. You want to put better examples around them. And also, too, you want to reward better behaviors for younger players. As much as you people say, oh, look at this, that Kunin's not scoring, Kunin's not doing this or that, right? But how many times can you say that Kunin was just doing things that just you can't do at an NHL level? A couple bad penalties here and there, but, you know, Kunin's a pretty responsible player. And we saw that today in the Washington game, right? Just a lot of little things that he does that if he's not scoring, you can still throw him out there and he's still helping you. He may not be helping you as much as people want, as much as his contract suggests, as much as getting to play with Granlund.
I think Eklund would have like 7 assists if Kunin could just like hit the net.
Maybe not 7. I don't want to do Luke that way, but at least maybe 3 or something like that. If you got to play with Timo Meier, for example, right? Mm-hmm. That'd be maybe 3 goals right there, 3 assists. On Williams Ledger. But again, though, also too, who are you going to put there? I mean, who else is clearly, if you're going to try to get the best out of Duclair with Hurdle, right? Zetterlund has earned a spot up there, but also too, look, if you put Zetterlund in Kunin's spot, Zetterlund's not any more proven a finisher than Kunin. There's kind of nobody clearly who should be there. You can put LeBanc there. LeBanc's a better finisher, but LeBanc obviously has shortcomings in other areas. You can put Hoffman there. Hoffman is clearly a better finisher, but Hoffman's game may not be quite what it was 5 years ago. And also, too, he has his shortcomings, too. So, you know, I've mentioned, at some point, Kunin's got to bury a bit and bury the passes. I know he scored today, but he's got to bury an actual pass from from William Eklund. But it's
but
not
you
as
have to
if,
also give him credit for being in those positions to receive.
That's
passes,
what I say.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I agree. I'm not that I'm in love with Kunin's game, but there's also something just to be said about an NHL rounded game. And you're kind of finding out now who can at least stay on the ice to not get the Sharks embarrassed. But that's kind of it.
That's like, the bar, right?
That's the bar.
To be watchable, because that Tampa Bay game was unwatchable.
Yeah. Can you be a fourth line hockey player is kind of the bar right now in San Jose.
To be a decent fourth line player. Yeah. I mean, Ryan Carpenter, right? Like maybe not, he may not even be a decent fourth line player, but he's a fourth line player that doesn't embarrass you out there. I mean, but yeah, let me ask you though, who would you put on, let's say it's Granlund and Eklund, and they look good today together, right? Sure. Unless you put Eklund up with Hurdle, which there is an argument for. But besides that argument though, like who would you put next? Who's the clear winger that should be there instead of Kunin on the Sharks? And don't say Gushin.
Not Gushin. They would not work on that line. I don't know, maybe Zetterlund, but it's not like that's even...
Yeah, but Zetterlund is being promoted now, though. I mean...
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And so. Last year, it's like we ripped on him for having no goals in 20 games. And it's not like there's any other better finisher. Like,
I mean, Zadina, right? I think everyone would say Zadina. But Zadina's game... let's talk about Zadina, because we haven't talked about him.
Sure.
Zadina's game has also clear shortcomings, too. He is tenacious. He's on the puck. I like that about him, which is why he's still here instead of, say, a Bortolo, right? Because Zadina is faster and stronger, and Zadina sticks his nose in there. I like that about him.
Mm-hmm.
But Zadina still has a lot to refine in terms of defensive coverage, and I've seen that. I've noted it in my notes. You know, there are reasons why he's not as obvious should be up there than Kunin. You can make an argument for it, especially if Kunin keeps missing his great A's, that put somebody that can bury a bit more up there and see what can happen. But it's not a landslide. They're not burying Timo Meier on a third or fourth line, you know, as Zadina's not that. So,
yeah, I think the Sharks just don't have enough top six forwards to make two lines that work. Even
they don't so right now. Yeah,
they don't. And even when they get Couture back, it's like, unless you put like Couture on like Hurdle's wing and then add somebody else like Zetterlund with them, then maybe you've got a competent top six line. But like, even then you're wasting out one of your center positions where the centers are dwindling away for the Sharks. So it's kind of a mess, and the line blender is just going to keep turning, I think, with David Quinn.
Yeah, I want to add I think the Sharks hoped that they would have more top six forwards, and I think we all did too. We saw big names like Duclair, like Hoffman, Barabanov too, even though Barabanov has been a Shark, productive in the recent past, things like that, right? And maybe those guys will find their level yet. But they haven't yet, though. I mean, Hoffman has been bad, I think. Duclair hasn't been much better. And I would say, too, in Duclair's instance, Duclair's had a benefit of playing almost exclusively with Hurdle. You know, Hoffman's been moved down a bit. So you can make an argument that Duclair's maybe been worse in some ways, because Duclair's played with the Sharks' only legitimate top six center up to Granlund's return today.
I think Duclair looks a little better because he hustles a little bit more than
Yeah, well, does. He's faster. I mean, yeah. So he
looks better, but is he really performing better?
Not really. Not statistically, chances. Not in terms of chances so much, right? And Barabanov
about the offense. We're not even talking about the defense.
Right. That's true. Jeez. That's true, yeah.
And it's not like the defense is horrible most nights, but it's also just so vanilla that it feels like it's painful. Like the amount of like skill plays that happen from a defender can be counted on like one hand in a game. Like the amount of plays that are not just like hold the puck, wait for a first pass, and that's it. Like that's the extent of the breakout for the Sharks. Nobody can skate out of the zone, I feel like, from the defensive side. I'm being a little over dramatic, but it feels like that. And we all kind of knew looking at this defense that it was going to be bad. But it really, I don't know if anyone's really stuck out to me on the defensive side. I mean, I still think Ferraro is doing okay. And I expected...
He can skate it out, at least.
He can skate it out, yeah.
Yeah, Knyazhov and Emberson, too, have had
a little bit Emberson. Of
jump. Yeah,
I liked him tonight. I think there was one play in particular that was like he got fumbled behind the net and he should have like passed it before he held onto it for too long. But other than that, I thought his game was actually
pretty a big part of the Kunin goal besides the assist, but it was his rush, his read up that gave the Sharks a clear entry. And that's what you want to see when you don't have the natural offensive talent, right? You have to play as a team. And that was Emerson doing that. A clear read, clear lane where it's not going to go the other way, right? Unless he really messes up, somebody really fumbles it there in a weird way. And so clear entry, and then the Sharks forwards kind of did the rest in terms of forecheck, and Eklund was in on that, and it leads to just a kind of a ugly, grimy kind of goal. I want to add too, and I would be a bit more optimistic about this if this wasn't game nine. I'm talking about the Washington game today. If it wasn't, if this was game one, and against a better opponent, I would be actually pretty pretty optimistic about what we saw from the Sharks in terms of the breakout. I actually asked a lot of questions of that in the post game, and I'll try to write a little bit about it. But and I think Drew Remenda mentioned it too on the broadcast, if you want to look back on that in the first period. But the Sharks' support seemed much just more on time. Guys were helping each other out. Just one player, for example, Giovanni Smith was pressured in the defensive zone corner on the breakout. And instead of being forced to whip a long pass or just to dump it out, which we've seen the Sharks do so much this year, just glassing out, right? Jan Rutto was right there on time to receive a short, 12-foot pass, very short pass from Smith. And because Washington's forecheck was contrary on Smith and they were behind the play a little bit, Ruda, who is not the swiftest of foot, had an easy exit out. And that's teamwork. And that's what the Sharks, I think, are capable of doing better. Not, making the playoffs better, but definitely better than 0-8-1 better. And so we saw some of that today, more so than I've seen in any other game. I actually liked the Sharks breakout today, which I can't say I've liked in any other game. I liked the Sharks forecheck today. I'm not saying it was outstanding and the chances, the shot attempts, 5-on-5, I think they were all pretty even. But I think that if we can pretend the first 8 games didn't happen, which you can, if we were to.
The season doesn't matter. Let's just do whatever we want.
But if this was the first game of the season, this Washington game, I would actually feel okay about this Sharks team, because that's a Sharks team that looked competitive and really could have won today with Granlund finishing a couple chances, or Kunin, obviously, or Hurdle had a couple good chances there. So if, again, this is one good game out of 9, I don't really think, even though the Sharks have played better games, not all games have been Tampa Bay bad. Like the Boston game was a little better than bad, but it was more like on the okay side, just for example, right? The Florida game was more, it's okay. Maybe the last Carolina game too. But this was the first game, and granted, again, the opponent was the weakest of the first few teams, the first 9 games of the season. Yeah, but 100%. But this was the first game where I would say the Sharks were good for 60 minutes.
There, I guess, is a good way.
There, to yeah, there. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There, yeah,
yeah, they were there. We got a goal, but which is crazy. They're missing a lot in a lot of places. I did like Blackwood again. A good start to the season. I think that's an interesting bright spot, that the goaltending has been good, like, not just like. I don't want to say good. We'll say like decent, above expected average.
And so, Kakinen's been decent too.
Yeah. So I think that's a light, bright spot. I think, Blackwood looks confident, which is interesting because he faces a lot of shots. And I do wonder if it's more of like he's that kind of goaltender that needs a lot of shots.
Yeah. Some of these guys like that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like rhythm goaltenders kind of thing. And because he did not look confident in New Jersey a lot of times. So, I don't know. It's not the worst thing in the world that our goaltending is good, but it's bad that our goaltending is decent and we're still 0-8-1. It's bad. It's like if the goaltending falls off.
That tells you a lot about a team, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're done. So what else about the roster happened this week that we want to touch on? We touched on Emberson joining the lineup, Bortolo, Peterson getting sent down. Granlund returned tonight. How did you think Granlund looked?
He looked good. He looked like he did in a couple of the preseason, or the one preseason game he was in, the LA game in Salt Lake. He looked like an impact player again, preseason, right? But it's kind of levels, right? Like if a player is just good in preseason, then that means, okay, in NHL, maybe he's just okay or bad. Sure. If a player looks great in preseason, then maybe he's good in the NHL. And so that's what Granlund looked like to me in that one preseason game. And then obviously the Vegas game, again, remind people that he says he got hurt in the second shift of that game. So whatever he saw the rest of the game wasn't it wasn't what he would say was anything close to who he is as a player. And we did see some of that. I think tonight looked healthy-ish out there, was hunting pucks. Him and I clipped one play with him and Eklund. They were both badgering Niklas Backstrom, who looks a little rough out there, I have to say. But they took the puck from him, and then Granlund very smartly didn't just crash the net. He kind of laid in the weeds and waited, stayed open, right? That was just art from both of those guys, you know, hustle and artistry. And I think he looked very, very good.
Yeah. I think he had one turnover that was like right at the blue line coming, like as a breakout. That was pretty rough, but it was more of like he just fumbled the puck, and it basically just cost a lot of his own time for the show. Sure. Nothing bad happened to it, but it just, that was the only bad play. Other than that, seemed like he was, some much needed skill was injected into the lineup with him. So,
but also forecheck too, right? All Granlund's good defensively, responsible defensively.
Go ahead. I'm not going to hate it. I'm going to be happy that there's somebody that can like match Eklund,
be, you know, competent.
Match Eklund's skill like a little bit and can stay on the ice. Not that Eklund's like, you know, he's still establishing himself as a top six, top nine NHL player, but I did enjoy his return. The Capitals also, I watched some Capitals games as well in my spare time. The whole Backstrom thing, he's really done.
Yeah.
And they started him up in like the first top six to start the year. And it's just like, now I think he's down to the third line.
Ooh, okay.
And they put Strom up, and Strom has looked way better than he was down in the third line to begin the year. And now he's up on the first line with Ovi and Wilson. And I think it's done for Niklas Backstrom. The problem is he's got like two more years on his contract at like $9 million or something like that. So anyway, short aside about the Capitals, but maybe they're not as bad as originally because they just had their lineup kind of really bad to start the year.
Well, I don't want to count a guy out who's had such a great career, but yeah, sure. He looked definitely tonight. He looked like a shadow of himself. A couple other guys to spotlight on the roster though, before we move on. I think. First, actually, I want to go back to Blackwood really fast. If Blackwood and Kakinen or can keep up this play, if the one thing the Sharks get out of the season is that they have figured out the answer in goal for the next couple of years here, wouldn't that be considering the last 5 years of goaltending, that would be pretty tremendous. And so let's hope that can happen. But then a couple of players more to spotlight. Fabian Zetterlin, once again, tonight, I like his game. He obviously doesn't belong on the first line. And so I think eventually he needs to be moved off of it just for his own betterment. I mean, it's asking a lot out of him, but he continues to just play a direct bowling ball style forecheck. Strong of body. One great play that I highlighted in the third period. Ovechkin got the puck up high, 5-on-5, and Zetterlin bullied Ovechkin and the puck out of the zone. And that's
Zetterlin.
That's great. Zetterlin can do that. At least that's what I was told before in New Jersey. And he didn't show that last year with the Sharks, but he's showing it now. So I think that he hasn't looked awful on the first line, which is good. He hasn't looked like totally out of his depth, but I think eventually though, he's better suited for your third line maybe. But I have liked his play consistently this year. And then besides that, have I liked anybody else this year? Eeny, meeny, miny, no.
Not really. we should mention that Barabanov is injured as well.
A big one, yeah.
Yeah, what's the time frame on his injury?
You know, that's funny, actually. No one has asked since Quinn said that it was week to week and he was going to get checked out. So actually, I think there's been so many other injuries and focus on losing streak and Jumbo retiring that none of us did our job and asked Quinn for exact timeline on it. But if it is week to week, as originally reported, that's not a bad thing. instead of month to month at least. And so hopefully it is closer to week to week, just for obviously for Barrett Bonhoff, because this is a big season for him as a UFA. But even the Sharks, right? I know everybody's about the tank, but you still want to be competitive. You don't want to be embarrassed out there. You don't want you want guys for other guys to play with, like William Eklund, when he's to play with somebody good. You want a Hurdle to have guys to play with. And so you want to be, you want to be competitive, right? You want to have the worst record in the league, but you also want to be competitive at the same time. And the Sharks are trying to get to that. They have the worst record in the league. They haven't been competitive except for tonight in my mind, at least in terms of the under the hood stuff, scoring chances, puck battles, stuff like that. They've been, you know, pretty behind in, I think, most of the other games, if not all of them. But anyway, so hopefully Alex comes back, and he hasn't been good to start the season. But hopefully he comes back, you know.
0 points in six games from before the injury. Hopefully, I mean, a little time off, and hopefully the finger is not too badly broken, and it's only a couple weeks out.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I guess the Sharks are hoping for. I mean, if you inject Granlund, Couture, and Barabanov into the top six, maybe you can win a few games, and also maybe not score three goals in five games, which is just, I'm going to keep repeating it, because my God, I don't remember the last time the Sharks were this. I actually don't, you know, let's talk about it, how bad the Sharks are, because I don't remember how bad the Sharks are, probably because it's been so, so very long that they've been this bad. They now have tied for the worst start in their franchise history.
0-8-1, baby.
0-8-1, 30 years of Sharks history, and this is tied for the worst. They also have the worst goal differential in their season, or to start a season in franchise history as well. So is this the worst Sharks team ever? Is a good question, I think, for an article. I didn't watch much Sharks hockey in 1993 and 1994, probably because I was very, very, very
young. Well, 1993-94, you wanted to watch that team, because that's a team that actually made the playoffs and upset the Red Wings. But
was it 2-3? That was
1991-92 and 92-93. Those were the... the Cal Palace teams.
Yeah, so I didn't watch a lot of Sharks back then. We could find somebody who did and just ask them if they think this is the worst Sharks team that they've ever seen, but the records are kind of piling up here for the start of the season. Anything else to add about that?
Well, I call me ever the optimist. I do try to look at the you have to with this team. I think, and also when you're dealing with, and I naturally have a personality too. I think that I try to look at that at the optimistic side of things. I think this team can be more like they were tonight, even though it's only one game of nine, and they may be the worst team in the league, but they should be a lot more competitive. So I don't think that they end up in that 11, the very first Sharks team, the expansion team, won 17 games. The second year team managed to be even worse. They won 11 games.
11, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, though, they're going to be that bad. But I will say, though, that the first eight games this year on the balance was I was a kid back then, so I didn't watch those first two Sharks teams. So I'm not sure if I can talk so much about them, but I can just say, like, worst hockey. If someone asked me on Twitter, is this the worst hockey team you've ever watched or something like that? And I said, well, I don't know. I had to think about that, because there's some pretty bad teams. The Coyotes teams of a couple of years ago, the Sabres, when they were trying to tank for McDavid. But those are the teams that they are in a discussion with, though, unfortunately for them. And I don't think they end up as bad. That's my opinion. I think they do find a way to be at least competitive. Doesn't mean that they're going to have probably the worst record. They have a pretty good head start on that. So the worst record in the league, it'll be an upset. It'll be a triumph of coaching, of locker room dynamics, if they somehow managed to not have the worst record in the league based on the kind of pit that they dug for themselves, you know, how behind the eight ball that they are. But I think that they are closer to the team we saw tonight, that will stay close and lose games. as opposed to, like, say, the Tampa Bay team, that the Tampa Bay game, when they, that was, like you said, that was unwatchable, and I had to be there, and I made a joke the next game that I think some people took the wrong way when I said something about, well, the Sharks' effort against the Carolina, at least the game is watchable tonight. And everyone's like, oh, the bar is so low now. Yeah, the bar is low. That's the point of that. That's the point of that joke. The bar is low. And it was so bad the night before that it was unwatchable, which I have maybe never said once or thought watching is, I like my job. Even if the team is bad, I still like watching hockey. And so I will say that this is the worst team I've covered. Which isn't saying anything. Isn't saying that much, because I haven't covered that many teams. Sure. First team again covered was the 2017-18 Golden Knights, and then the Sharks after that. And so this is the worst group of the five Sharks team, or the four Sharks teams that missed the playoffs. And then this one will likely be the fifth one. And so this, what I saw in the first eight games, definitely was the worst, and they probably will end up the worst of all of them, just because they don't have the dynamic kind of players that can kind of overcome a shallow depth like Timo and Carlson, or can help mask it a little bit. I mean to say,
and even with them, they had the least amount of goal or least amount of wins last year. So
right, but I thought that team, and we talked a lot about this last year, that up to the trade deadline, that they could have been well 500 team if they had better goaltending, if they had locked down a couple of leads that they had. Right, in terms of just how the team was performing, the under the hood kind of micro stats, the team was average-ish actually. And that's what I saw too. They were really competitive, really close on games. They just couldn't close out games. But anyway though, so I think still that's where they end up. But again, I thought that they would be a little bit better, and they started off, they were embarrassingly bad on the whole, the first eight games of the season. So they still have a lot of space to prove me wrong.
Yeah, and I think they probably are going to end up with the worst record. I admit it, also only 25% chance to really even get like the first overall pick, even if you have the worst overall record.
Right, so that's the thing to remind people, that you don't get more, your lottery odds don't improve if you only win five games this year.
Yeah, you can win so, one less point, and you know,
you want the worst record,
or not, you Connor Bedard instead of but either way, I don't want people to like hinge all their hopes directly on a lottery win this early in the season, because you will just be depressed if you follow this team just hoping for them to lose. I think we should pick out like bright spots of players that are playing well and are going to be a future part of the Sharks. And I think Eklund is very clearly shown in this first couple weeks that I don't think he's ever going to play in the AHL again.
He should, barring
some unforeseen circumstance. And that's a win. That's a positive step in the right direction for a prospect that needs to be a part of the Sharks' future.
I think the next bar for him, though, is he still has to produce, though, and that's going to be right. And so that hasn't been there. Yeah, you can blame Luke Kunin for it, but that's not all on Luke Kunin. Eklund has had his chances too that he didn't bury.
Granlund could have buried that one tonight too.
Yeah, but again, he's got to have some production to back it up. I think he will. I think you had a prediction of 40 points. I'm not off board of that yet. I think that can happen. So
it can, if he starts really getting, I mean, if they get Couture back and they start actually getting some like power play goals and stuff, it's possible. But you know, he's still got to make it there. Regarding the like 40 points, yeah, that does seem a little bit too far, but we'll see.
Right now.
And we were all really hoping for a lot more, but that is a good parameter for where he should be at this point in his career. But I am excited for his future based on this week, and I think that's a win for the Sharks.
Yeah, like that's if you guys haven't known, I'm sure you guys have, the last 4 or 5 years, that's what I've been trying to do, find the guys who would stick around and write about them and focus on them, because what else am I going to write about? I wrote my, if people think that I'm letting it go, like I wrote my Mark Edward Vlasic decline piece 3 years ago.
Yeah.
during the COVID season and all the Sport Logic stats, that article is there. That's already been written. Do I need to harp on more of that? I don't think so. You know, he's here. The contract is a big reason why. What am I going to write about? And so, so I try to focus on that. See multiple Noel Gregor articles over the years. Some Rudy articles, stuff
How
like
is
that.
Noel Gregor doing? I haven't.
I'm actually not really sure.
He's in Toronto, but I haven't checked and see. And he's in the lineup, and he has a contract and all that. But I don't know how he's doing stats.
It's always hilarious that he scored a preseason goal and then he scored an NHL goal, and they looked the same. They were just these flutter shots that beat a Montreal. I think it was Montreal both games. Maybe it's different goalies. But anyway, though. And so with the Sharks, I try to spend more time focusing on the guys who might have a chance to be around. And so that is right now, guys have shown that kind of promise, and not to exclude guys that aren't here. They just may need more time in the Barracuda, but the guys that have shown the most promise, you know, Eklund, obviously, Zetterlund, we've talked about. Blackwood's a big one that people forget. Blackwood. He's a little bit older, obviously, but if you solve your goaltending and he can stay consistent over the years, then that's a huge, huge block.
A new goaltender, like that's like sure. The way the NHL works is like you kind of need one for a while until you can get a new one, or unless you have a superstar, obviously, but you need solid to be able to get there.
And maybe he's young enough, maybe he will be your guy 5 years from now when you're good. You never know, but you also want that good goaltending, because good goaltending helps when you play well. Then you win games because your goaltending responds in kind and your goaltending plays well too. I think Blackwood also benefited, even though he had to face a lot of chances also on the power play, but it was a better offensive effort. So he wasn't pelted like he was against the Avalanche or the Hurricanes, that first Hurricanes game. And so that's a clear one. Maybe, you know, this is a big maybe right now, but you see promise in a guy that you liked, Emberson. Knyazhov has been a little up and down, but there's been some good stuff. That's the stuff that I'm looking for. The guys who are going to stick, and the guys that you're looking to stick, like a Bortolo, you do kind of pick at their games a little bit, because that's what I'm watching. I'm honestly not watching Hoffman that closely, not watching Duclair that closely. When on shifts, I like to concentrate on one player usually, and it's usually going to be one of the guys that I wonder, you know, is this guy going to be around?
Yeah, and I think it's the way we got to do this whole season. So me as the way that I picked my Sharks fandom, I focus a lot on Sharks prospects. Probably right now, because the Sharks are so bad. And I think we have a few actually good updates, and we can run through them a little bit quickly here, just to round out the episode. So Sharks number 4 overall pick from last year, Will Smith. He had a little bit of a slow start to his college career. So he started his career at Boston College with his NTDP linemates, Ryan Leonard and Gabe Perreault. They started a line together as well at Boston College, which is kind of cool. He, through his first two games, had one assist and like one shot on goal or something like that, or two shots on goal. And people were very, very concerned. They were worried that the amazing numbers that he put up last year in juniors was kind of like a flash in the pan. And that Will Smith's game was never going to translate to college. So I went back and I watched his second game, his LIU game, which he had like one secondary assist. And I counted, and I went back and I just basically counted all of the chances that he created that I considered to be like high danger, or that were, you know, had a good chance of actually creating something. And I counted 12 throughout the game, which is insane. And it was
Are you saying that Leonard and Pearl were Luke Kunin-ing him?
Maybe a little bit. There was literally so many chances where it was like backdoor plays, he puts it right on the stick and the guy pushes it wide, like over and over. And he was that LIU game, everybody kind of saw it, said one secondary assist against LIU, who is not a good hockey team. They're in the same division, or they're same, like they're still Division One or whatever the whole NCAA system is, but like they're not a good hockey team.
Sure.
And people kind of freaked out a little bit. But I think if he plays that game like 9 more times, he has 3 points instead of 1. And then he went through the next week and just tore it up.
Three points in each of the 9 games, right? His 3 points in 9 games isn't that right?
Yeah, I meant like if he plays that, like the way he played that game.
I just wanted to cover for you there.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, he did. The next 3 games he had two points, 2 points, and then 3 points. So he, by the end of 10-26 Thursday, he was leading the NCAA in freshman points, which is miraculous. That's exactly what you want Will Smith to do. So then I went
back. Is that miraculous or expected, though?
Miraculous in a turnaround sense, because he started off pretty slow. That first game that he played was not good. But it's expected and hopeful, I think is the way to put it. But I think there's some concerns, basically, because Will Smith plays a kind of a like a patient style of play and a little can look lackadaisical at times and a little his pace isn't so great a lot, and he can look slow because he's just not really skating as hard as he could be, but he's very cerebral, and I honestly think that he looks slower than he actually is just based off of his pace rather than his actual speed on the ice. So people can have a tendency to look at some game tape of him and say he's not doing anything out there, but you have to really like hone in on the details with him, and there's something there that's a little bit more of an it factor than even his line mates like Leonard and Perreault. So,
I wanted to bring up one pushback. We talked about it a little bit, just what you thought about it. JD Burke of Elite Prospects, he brought up this point about Smith, and just that he thought that Smith was not the driver of his line and maybe the third most impactful player of his line that he had seen. And granted, I think he mentioned that he hadn't watched all of Smith's games. And this was also a couple days ago too. So, but what did you think of that commentary?
Yeah. And he even admitted like later in comments, like he hadn't watched the third period yet. And that third period of the game that he watched, Smith was like dynamite. And he's like, maybe I wrote off a little. He wasn't really writing him off. He was just mentioning that what I'm mentioning, where it's like his pace is a little low. It doesn't look like he's doing a whole lot. But when you like get to the finer details, he really is. He's like, he anticipates plays so well in the offensive zone that like it looks like he's just a little behind the play, but he's really ahead. And that sounds dumb, but I think he is. And Leonard is going to be is going to be an NHLer just based off of how he's got a really good shot. And he's also just a very, very good forechecker. So you could say that he's just the driving force of that line, but I really think it's Smith rather than the other two. And I don't have any evidence that Perreault is a better player than Smith right now.
And I want to also defend JD a little bit, just that I just look at this comment. It was a question from actually a guy that I recognize liking my articles. I assume maybe he's listening. So Luigi Lombardi, which is a terrific name. I know it can't be a real name, but if it is,
maybe
props to you because that's an awesome name. But on Twitter at not Pierre Petit. But he asked JD, just what have you thought about Smith? And this was October 26th. So this was three days ago. And so JD was kind of giving just off the cuff what I've seen so far in that game you mentioned, and also didn't account for Smith's third period. So I want to make sure that people don't think that JD is burying Smith there. He just was offering off the cuff.
Even more points player to JD, and I haven't watched this game yet, but the next game they played back-to-back nights. Apparently Smith played very poorly, so I haven't watched it. I will let you know if he also did play very poorly.
Okay.
And it's a little bit of an up-and-down thing with Smith, I will say that. There's still definitely room to grow, but there's something there that I think Sharks fans should be excited about.
Okay.
Because there's been a lot of highlights of like Leo Carlson's in the NHL, Connor Bedard's in the NHL, Adam Fantilli's in the NHL, and the Sharks are ending up with Will Smith, who has
one. Or Matvei Michkov is scoring a point a game.
Yeah. Or Matt Michkov's tearing up the KHL.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think we have to be patient with Smith, but there is something that is special about him. That's my little prospects updates for him.
Okay.
I think that'll do it. I think we can just mention just the Smith as a prospect update of the week and maybe have a couple more on the future shows, but
sure.
I'm
going to tease. I have an exciting, I'm going to practice this again. I asked you earlier, Kaznikov.
Kashnikov. Yeah, let's talk about Kashnikov.
Update, but we can save that though. So I'm sure that the audience is waiting on bated breath for their update on Kashnikov.
The 2021 seventh round pick, Yevgeny Kashnikov for the Sharks. Anyway, I think, and this is my bold prediction, the Sharks will win their next game.
Well, based on how our bold predictions have going, that means that they will not win, and they will be they will be routed by Vancouver, and all the positivity that I'm trying to muster from tonight's Washington game will all be lost.
That's true, and they're going to lose like 8-0. So
yes.
Anyway, no, I predict it. They're going to win their next game, and then next week you can tell me how wrong I was. All right, guys, I hope everybody has a good week. Enjoy some Sharks hockey.
Short episode. We'll get at it more in the coming weeks. So we have some guest ideas lined up, all that kind of stuff. So
great. See you guys.
See you guys.